This is Icon Art Radio. I'm Bill Teeple. I'm here with my co-host, Alan Cobb. And our guests today are Madeline Dujolet and Jillian Brown, whose show opens at Icon Gallery in Fairfield on December 7th, 2012. And I've been looking forward to this show for, I don't know, we've been planning about a year and a half now, it seems like. It's starting to come together. I've seen some work in studios, some work I haven't seen at all, and some pictures have been coming through on the computer. It's sort of like gelling before my eyes. And Jill's pieces that are being laid around, getting ready to go on the walls, are wonderful, and they're getting rave reviews already from people.
Maybe I'll leave them on the floor, huh?
Well, that, you know, we curate in these informal ways. That's a possibility, but I think we'll actually hang these on the wall this time. The one hanging looks nice. I'm waiting to see the lighting, and we'll be working on that. Well, I don't know where to start, except for I will just say from what I have seen is you guys have conceptually kind of different places that you work from, but there's a unified quality to your work that I think makes the show work very well together. Mm-hmm. There's a kind of... there's a kind of poetic, there's some crossover in techniques, but there's a feeling level of just the visual quality of the work and kind of an emotional impact that it has, just apart from it, the conceptual side of it, that is very like soft and lyrical and poetic, and both of your works always moves me deeply that way. And so there's that sort of overarching sort of quality to the whole show, or I can see as it develops, and that's, I'm looking forward to it. How did you guys, tell me a little the history of how this show came about, besides me asking you to do it. It seemed like you guys were working together, you were traveling together, yeah. You went to the Armory show together in New York, and yeah. You seem to have connected somewhat. Let's hear a little bit about how that developed.
I remember you asking me if I felt that I'd like to have a show, because I had just moved from California and I was doing a lot of meditation and rounding, and I was very inward. And we were postulating that at some point, when I started working again, there would be a slight...
And this was 3 years ago that you moved
this
here?
Was, yeah. 2.5 to 3 years ago, and that there would be something emerging from this kind of pause in my life of being extremely active in the art world. And I felt that it would be wonderful to have a show. And you said, well, who do you want to have it with? And I said, I want to have it with Jill. And you said, oh, that sounds wonderful. So that's how, and then we scheduled it, I think, many different times. We changed the dates. There were things that came up in our lives. And we were all very flexible about that. But this time we didn't change the date, which was very good for both of us to have a deadline. And so what happens with Jill and I, the materials we use are... crossover materials, and the techniques we use, some of them are crossover technically, and we didn't collaborate per se, you know, being that we did pieces together, but we did visit each other's studios, and we did, you know, we did confer on things, and but we each did go in our own way. It was very important for
me
to do
that.
But there
was some consideration of doing some collaborative pieces, is that
yeah.
right? But that didn't
but
quite...
But what happened with me was I really felt that since I hadn't worked in a while, I needed to look in the mirror. Mm-hmm. And looking in a mirror, you don't want to see someone else's face coming back at you. And it was important to me because, honestly, I really wasn't sure what was going to come out. And and I wasn't sure even when I started working, because, you know, I could have gone in so many different directions. But for me, there were definite directions concepts I wanted to include, which, you know, I don't want to take up this whole radio
program. No, it's okay. But
keep talking. We'll give her her chance.
Okay. Well, one of the things which actually occurred in Fairfield, which I've been very impressed with and interested in, was there were people here, artists that I respect very much, doing work with separate images. Now, I had never done that. And there was Mark Petrick, who did those photographs.
You mean separate images juxtaposed?
Yeah, juxtaposed, combined images. Billy Mentor, or Will Mentor, you call him here, and Jill. And then there were other people in the art world that did combined images, like Judy Pfaff is one of them, and many others. And I've been looking at this for a while, and I just said, well, go ahead, do it, you know, see what happens. And it was much more complex than I thought it would be, because you have, I do multi-layered work, and I had, at one time, I had hundreds of images that could be used for one piece. Now, each of the pieces have different qualities. So it wasn't like this piece could overlay with that piece. It wasn't that way. It was like one piece had so many possibilities. And I ended up doing a horizontal format for these newer pieces. Although, you know, I did do other formats as well, because, you know, sometimes they were just so complicated and so hard, I had to go away from them and do something more simple. But I stuck with them in a very small space. I don't have a real studio, really. And I injured my knee in the beginning. So I was like hobbling around, kind of like bending over in this space, some of which is only like 3.5 feet high. But there was something in it that kept saying, you can do it, you can do it, go for it, go for it. You know, like there was like this energy that kept, and another thing was, is that for years I've been doing this kind of writing called Beyond Words. And
which I think I saw some images of that. That's quite lovely.
Thank you. And I wanted to see if I could put those with the combined images, with paintings, with drawings. And what I do is I start out always with something done by hand. That's very important to me, the intersection between handwork and technological work that's produced. I still haven't found where I'm comfortable, but it always starts by hand, either a drawing or the writing I call drawing, or staging. I stage things to photograph. I have to start by hand. Then I go into technology. Then I go back to the hand. You know, I have
so,
to start
so
and end
for
the
listening
with the
audience
hand.
Who can't do it, this is it's always interesting to do an art show that's on the radio, because we can say, talk about the artwork, but we can't see it. So describe, these are like, it would be a two. You're talking now about the 2D images, two dimensional images.
I'm talking about two dimensional images
that are layered some digital, some handwork.
There's a lot of work, and it's so funny because they look so simple when you look at them. And you know, I look at the results and I say, "Oh my God!" You know, if they only knew. and the process, the artist's process, is the thing. That's the real thing. The end product that you see on the wall is part of it. But it's the struggle and the choices and the layers and all the concepts that come into play, they're just juggling around in one's consciousness. And it's so interesting. Sometimes, honestly, the pieces like literally fell down on the floor because I had so many parts. And I thought, wow, that's really nice because, and the other thing I do is I make shoes also. which is kind of a product of me moving and traveling and evolving, and you know, they take on anthropomorphic qualities to them, which is another thing, and then I photograph them. But this particular piece, it's called bidirectional, and it's bidirectional because of the falling down of the pieces. I had the shoes going in one direction with the shadows, actually photographed the shadows. But then, because in digitally you can reproduce things so many times and draw over, and another one fell over that going in the other direction. And I thought, that is so interesting. These are my pins and needles shoes. Mm-hmm. And the needles stick out and everything. And I thought, that is so interesting. So I did the shoes going in two directions. And then besides that, then there's the writing that comes after that that reminds me, this particular writing reminded me so much of Leonardo da Vinci drawings, I could not believe it. Because the original is quite much smaller, but when I blew it up and made it sepia, it really... And then it ends with a lot of marks. There's a lot of marks going in many directions, but it's a directional piece, but it does progress from one image to another image to another image to another image. And depending on how I felt, you know, and then the greatest thing that happened with these was that in order to make them, I had to go out of the borders of them. And, you know, like I had to, you know, the wax had to go here and there, and it overlapped what I thought was the real image. And then I started noticing that these borders with all the processing showing were really interesting. So some of them, it was too late not to cut them off. But the ones that wasn't too late for me, that's when the work started getting organic and interesting, really interesting. I mean, it's okay, you know, before that. But when the organic part took over and then nature started taking over with processing, and that got so exciting to me.
We should do is we should put this on earphones so people could listen to it while they walk around the show, because I think
they
would really have a greater appreciation of the process portion of this artwork. So thank you. That was good.
Maybe.
We can't wait to see it. I'm sure that others can't. Now, let's just say one other thing.
Yeah.
There's not only the 2D work, but you're going to have some installation pieces.
Yes, I'm going to have many installation pieces. I'm going to have one in the window.
Which are
Jill
a similar
and I
kind
are
of layered thing, in a way. Not 2D layering, but like psychological layering.
A psychological layering. Yeah, I'm having a big installation in Bill's room in the back. Both Jill and I are using a darkened room for work that we do. And then I have an installation in the window in the front. I've always wanted those windows to have artwork in it. And so Jill and I are both doing that. And then in the gallery itself, besides the water piece in the back, I am having at least two or three other water pieces on pedestals that are little. And, you know, walking on water with the shoes and the burning on fire. And
well, I'm sure that the listening audience that just tuned in and their radio on the car.
What's going on?
Wondering who is this person? But also is very curious to see this show, because I've seen some of it already, but these people listening on the radio are probably thinking, whoa, I better go see that thing, and I want them to.
When does the show open?
December 7th, 2012, Friday night at the First Friday Art Walk in Fairfield. We should give equal time here to Jill.
Yes, absolutely. I could go on forever.
Let's hear a little bit about how your portion of the show came about and how your processes maybe compare to...
Well,
Jillian's, I mean, by this person, Madeline. Oh, I'm going to say this. This is KRUU 100.1 FM. This is Icon Art Radio. And we're Alan Cobb and I, I'm Bill Teeple, are interviewing Madeline Dujolet and Gillian Brown.
Well, as Madeline's been talking, and I talked, I think, quite a bit about the pieces last week.
She was on last week's show, yes.
But I was just trying to think of our commonalities, you know, and your use of the word poetic. And we do both have a certain ongoing juxtaposing of somewhat unrelated imagery. You know, I think that maybe it's that collision that might feel poetic. There's a commonality in that we both use the photographic image a lot. And I have yet to see Madeline's sculptures for the most part, but I have seen how she will set things up and use it. They're wonderful as images in her two-dimensional work, and they're kind of startlingly beautiful often. And spatially, hard to decipher, which I like. Mm-hmm. I come from a photo background, so that comes into these works. And even when I'm not using photography, I'm using highly recognizable, they look like photographs in a sense, whether they are or not. And there's a certain commonality in materials, which you mentioned. Gosh, I'm not quite sure at this point what to say about my work.
Yeah, but you're mostly known to the Fairfield audience for your video sculptures or small installation mm-hmm. pieces. Mm-hmm. And this time you're presenting one at least, I mm-hmm. know, of that type of work. But you've a little bit looped back, and we talked some about this last week, to the encaustic layered pieces, which is somewhat the territory she's working in. So it's a nice combination
mm-hmm.
that way.
Mm-hmm. And the video, there'll probably be two. The videos are the one I haven't shown here. And they're part of a group of work. And I've forgotten what I called it, goodness. Anyway, for me, they related to how things come into being. It was called Five Works on Becoming. And they are loosely layered in terms of what is projected, and then they're also layered because I'm projecting on small sculptures, usually, that have several surfaces, although not always. And they're related to the painting that I've done, in that juxtaposition and layering and letting, you know, a sense of foregrounding certain bits of information and letting the rest stay there, but it's a little bit quieter.
Who first started moving into the encaustic realm?
Well, we did. You know, it's not. It's such a delicious.
Right. But you were doing
medium.
This over a decade ago because we had some.
Yeah, I mean, but I did it because I saw how delicious it looked.
Right. But were you always working with wax
I've been
too?
Doing it for about 20 years.
So you both were.
But for our less media savvy audience, maybe you could just say a word about what it is.
It's beeswax mostly, and it's the.
And color.
And it really gives things a luscious
and color.
Quality.
And I bet this is true of Madeline, too. And encaustic is the oldest paintings, they're cave paintings, but some of the oldest paintings that are not on cave walls are encaustics, and they come from Egypt, and they last. I mean, they were probably all sorts of paintings, I suppose. But the encaustics last, and they used colored pigment embedded in wax and made the most beautiful. You should go see them in museums, sometimes portraits. But I used it because of its layering possibilities. So I used it for translucency. And with, any attempt at color didn't really satisfy. So I used it to be able to... prior to that, I'd done layering with airbrush, which also gave me a lot of control about what I wanted to obscure and what I wanted to bring forth and what I wanted to erase. But the encaustic can actually lend a little bit of fogginess to the layer underneath. It's a spatial thing
it's
as well as a content
thing. That misty, poetic quality.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. It's looking into.
But I think it's wonderful. That's what I wanted to bring out, how this use of the wax, because it's a
lovely
element. Yeah,
but there was another technique that we used. See, Jill and I both taught the magic of translucence at MUM last March, and we showed students different ways of making surfaces translucent. So one of them was definitely the encaustics. But there's another one using acrylic mediums. And there's varnishes, there's gels, there's very opaque, there's medium opaque, there's all kinds of ways of juxtaposing one image over another image and seeing through it. Mm-hmm. But it's not as deep as the encaustic. It's more laminated. Mm-hmm. You know, it's more like that. But the encaustic, as Jill was saying, has a spatial quality to it. And you can, of course, make that layer in between another image as dense as you want it to be. And both of us don't use color in the wax. Now, I
both of you what?
Do not use pigmented wax.
You layer with it in it.
We use color in the images, or I do. I use the images have the color.
And then you layer with wax.
And I layer with wax. If I want to bury that image, I bury it with a clear or less clear. I can control how clear the wax is. But the reason I don't do it is because I have done it in the past. And it's too clumsy as far as a painting technique is concerned. My paintings are much finer, they're more refined, and I'd like more control over the paint. With wax, you have a heat element, you've got the density element, you've got the brush element. You know, to brush something with wax, to get really, really delicate. I know they did it in the
middle. I know, however those Egyptians did it. Well,
yeah,
the Egyptians.
Or whatever, you know, yeah. I don't know how they did it. You know, did they use the one hair squirrel brush that they use in India? I doubt it. You
without
know,
the wax solidifying.
Without, you know, or demolishing the one hair. It's just, I'm sure there's ways of Googling and looking at all this stuff up, but for me, I didn't like it. It was too clumsy. It was like painting with a shoe, you know, to use another metaphor.
Nice.
But you just layer too. You just cool. obscure the images yeah. with layering yourself.
I'd love to
Jill.
See you do a painting with a shoe.
With the shoes.
Yeah, I just, you know, I probably went to that because it related to the airbrush paintings that I had done. But I had seen some, you know, it's kind of a popular medium.
But I hadn't really been that exposed to this until I saw those two pieces that you put in our grand
How
opening
nice.
Show. And you know, they've made such a strong impression on me because it's that quality of the wax and the layering and the mistiness that's created.
Yeah, I did a little oil painting underneath, and then I found that I was using, you know, I'm not trained. I just read in a book a little bit and didn't know very much, and I was using a propane torch. But I could use the propane torch to, like, make part of the layer thinner and part of it thicker mm-hmm. so that I could, you know, take a little painting in the back and have part of it obscured but part of it clear. It was pretty nice.
Just your typical art instruments. A shoe heel and a propane torch in a new direction.
But also, you know, with these kinds of techniques, you invent ways. Like, I had to invent a way. There's part of that bidirectional piece that I've been talking about where I did not want to laminate. If you use the wax hot enough, it will just laminate the piece with, if it's thin, laminate the paper on top of it right against the image, and sometimes that's great. But I needed it to be opaque, more opaque, and not show through as much. And so I figured out a way of just putting the wax to bond it around the edges.
Hmm. That's nice.
And leaving the middle of it free.
Oh, wow.
I want to make a comment about that, because sometimes I have people who are becoming artists or who are artists but haven't been to art school, and they have this feeling that what you learn in art school is technique. Mm-hmm. And to say that you don't learn, it sounds like the art schools are being sloppy. But the fact is that any artist, you know, it's a lifetime endeavor, and everybody's going to invent with their medium. And that's actually why there isn't tons of technique taught, because it's a matter of finding out what you want to say and then finding out. And it's not that you can't take workshops, it's not that you can't learn things, but that's not exactly the college education in art.
Well, yeah, unless you're studying 19th century portrait painting.
But they don't do that in curriculum.
It's a whole other thing today, you're right, in art school. And I had both things. I went to a school that taught more traditional techniques, then I transferred to another school that was more about conceptual, what art's all about, and finding what you have to say. And really, if you don't have anything to say, then you don't need to learn any technique. But if you have something to say, then you figure it out. You figure out how to say it, and the art schools help you along those lines.
Of course. And it's not that there's zero technique taught, but the possibilities are simply infinite, because they tend to involve investigation and invention. And that's going to happen over the decade that you're making your pieces, as opposed to the semester in school.
Right. It's really a launching pad more than anything.
Yeah.
And then it's lifelong in doing it.
Well, if it's still 2012 as you're listening to this show, and it's not yet the beginning of 2013, then by all means come to Icon Gallery and enjoy this joint show.
Actually, it's through the beginning of 2013.
Yes, yes. But well, actually, hopefully they'll be hearing this before 2013.
We've actually set some dates. December 7th through October 26th.
October?
December through October.
I'm sorry, January.
Oh, January 26th.
What did I just say?
October.
December 7th through January 26th, 2013.
Maybe Bill's getting sick of hanging shows.
No, I've been, I just
busy.
Got okay. back. I'm a long trip.
That's good to
okay.
know.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.